You know what you're listening to?
Is that a trick question?
It's the I Still Love This Game podcast with your host, Matthew Damien.
He's an idiot. Don't listen to he's an idiot.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 29 of the I Still Love This Game podcast. In today's show, we're going to be covering Slam's list of the top 100 players of all time, Zaza Pachulia, the NBA logo, Anthony Davis, the East versus West, and LeBron's latest accomplishment of 30,000 points, 8,000 rebounds, 8,000 assists, and 4,000 turnovers. Wait, whoops, I was meant to cross that out. Sorry, we're not meant to mention that. Sorry, sir. Sorry about that. I couldn't resist. Okay, let's get into the topics. And we're going to begin with Slam's list of top 100 players. Now, this isn't the first time they've done this. I think it was when the NBA actually did their top 50, they came out with their top 50. And then a few years later, they came out with the top 75. And now they've gone ahead and done the top 100. Now, Slam used to be quite influential when it came to basketball and basketball culture. They were very successful at one point in trying to merge basketball and hip-hop culture. And they came out with Kicks magazines and all this other garbage, right? I think they had a Kicks section in nearly every magazine that would come out. And it became so popular that they actually would do quarterly magazines of just shoes, right? As ridiculous as that sounds. Now, the reason I bring this up is the reason why I wasn't excited. I didn't even know this was happening until someone sent it to me. And they really don't know basketball. They've never come up with anything interesting. It's always real emotional pieces. Like, I remember they, seeing an early cover with Allen Iverson, a rookie Allen Iverson, and the big bold letters, "Who's Afraid of Allen Iverson?" I mean, what's that got to do with his game? Like, telling us how good he is. So they're not exactly high up on my list of basketball historians. And the reason for that is they're completely inconsistent. I mentioned earlier that they've come up with two previous lists. And the first one, I think Will Chamberlain was, and this is in 97 no less, so there wasn't any LeBron James or Kobe Bryant. I mean, Kobe was in the league, but obviously he wasn't considered a top player of all time. It was his rookie year. And Will Chamberlain was only, I believe, sixth or fifth in that. I remember reading over that list retrospectively, and I couldn't believe that, right? And then a few years later, Wilt was rated number two. Oscar Robertson was number three, which I thought was interesting. I thought they were rated a little bit too high at the time, truth be told. I wasn't a big Wilt Chamberlain fan at that point. And now I had a look on their list, and lo and behold, Wilt Chamberlain has dropped down to number seven, if you can believe that. And Oscar Robertson isn't even in the top 10. And quite honestly, it bothered me a little bit as to how inconsistent they were. So what changed with Wilt? How he can go from 6 to 2, and they admitted that that was a grievous error, and then all of a sudden he drops back to number 8. Now, if you want to say that LeBron and Kobe and Shaq came along, okay, fine. But what about Magic, Kareem, and Bill Russell, who are all ranked ahead of him now? That makes absolutely no sense. But I was asked what I thought about it, so let's go. Let's get right into it. And I'm going to begin with LeBron being far too high up at number 2. Now, I get that he's, from a statistical standpoint, he's going to go down as the greatest player of all time. From a statistical standpoint. Don't twist that around. I don't want to be the intro to somebody's podcast or YouTube video or whatever. I said from a statistical standpoint, he's going to be the greatest of all time. And that's cool. I will happily accept that. But that's an accumulated totals, by the way. And that has a lot to do with longevity. Kareem is number one all-time score in terms of points scored. That doesn't mean he was the greatest scorer that the game's ever seen. Karl Malone's number two. And I have never heard anybody ever say that Karl Malone is the second greatest scorer in NBA history. Likewise with LeBron, okay, there's a very good chance that he's going to end up with Kareem's, or overtaking Kareem for most points scored in NBA history. He may as well get really close to becoming to John Stockton's assist numbers as well. But that doesn't mean he's the greatest passer of all time. That doesn't mean he's the greatest scorer of all time. Now, I'm willing to give Slam a tiny pass, not a complete pass, but a tiny pass on them selecting LeBron at number two, because their motivations could have been not because they think LeBron is number two, but simply to capitalize on the conversation that's will never go away, apparently, between Jordan and LeBron. So that, and they wouldn't be the first time, it wouldn't be the first time people have done that. There's a great book, Who's Better, Who's Best, in basketball. It's by Elliot Carb. And he used to be, during the NBC when they had the rights to it. So before ESPN got their grubby little hands on it, the NBC did a fantastic job with the NBA. I think most people who have watched NBC broadcasts would agree with that. And the guy that was always at courtside was Mr. Stats, Elliot Carb. And what he did was he wrote the book, Who's Better, Who's Best, and he actually put Shaq at number one, and Wilt was number two, and Jordan was number three. So that was interesting. And in fact, when I read the book, I emailed him, and he admitted in not so many words that he selected Shaq to create publicity for the book because it was such a controversial take. So I get what maybe Slam's trying to do the same thing here, but some of the other ones, I can't give him a pass on it. And let's keep going with it, with the very next selection, and that is Magic being number three. Now, I have no problem with Magic being number three. The problem I have is Larry Bird being number 10. Bird versus Magic was an absolute rivalry, and a legitimate case could be made for both of those guys being the best in the world during the 80s. Maybe the best of all time in terms of completeness, at least from the offensive end. Because both guys could dribble. Bird was an incredible shooter. They could rebound. They could pass the ball. They were great leaders. They were clutch. Think of Magic's junior skyhook. And Larry Bird has an entire library of clutch shots. He was maybe the greatest clutch shooter in NBA history before Jordan came along. And that includes Jerry West. So that's saying a lot. Now, for Larry Bird to be number 10 and Magic being number 3, that's inexcusable. They have to be so close together because, as I said, you can make a great argument for Larry Bird being ahead of being better than Magic Johnson. This isn't like Kevin Durant versus LeBron James. Although you could make the argument recently that Kevin Durant's better, but if you're comparing the two careers, there has to be a serious separation, at least at this point, for Durant to LeBron. And LeBron obviously having the superior career so far. With Magic and Bird, so similar though. I would, if you got Magic at three, I would severely question if Bird was any lower than five. He has to be either fourth or fifth if you got Magic at three. Now, if you want to rank Magic lower because you want to say, well, maybe there was, you know, Bird wasn't as athletic, or they were playing in the 80s, and the, you know, basketball's evolved, blah, blah, blah. I hate that argument, by the way. But if you're going to say that about Bird, you better say that about Magic, too. And if Bird's going to be number 10, then Magic better be number 7th, or number 8, or number 9. It's just that simple. They screwed up royally with that. That may be the worst part of this list, and that's saying a lot so far. Kareem is number 4. I've got no real problem with that. And then we've got Shaq and Kobe, not in that order, at 5 and 6. So they're both ahead of Bill Russell and Wilt Chamberlain, which is unbelievable. That's truly unbelievable. In fact, what's really messed up about this is the fact that of the top 6 players, 4 of them were on 2 teams. And what I mean by that is obviously Magic and Kareem, and then Shaq and Kobe. That's insane. At some point, If Jordan cops grief for playing with Scottie Pippen his entire career and winning with Scottie Pippen, somewhere along the lines, are we going to discount Kareem for playing with Magic or vice versa, or Shaq for playing with Kobe or vice versa? Look, I love Kobe Bryant. I loved his tenacity. I loved how complete his game was. I loved his leadership, especially in the second championship runs. I loved the fact that he actually developed into potentially the best player during the early 2000s, but still deferred to Shaq because he knew he had to have Shaq alongside him. I loved all that. And I loved the fact that he was willing to take a chance and say, look, if Shaq doesn't go, I want to go. I want to leave the Lakers. And I want to start my own legacy. I want to prove to people I can win without Shaq. I like that. I really like that about Kobe. But there's no chance in hell he is a top 5 player in NBA history. I would proudly wear a Kobe Bryant jersey throughout Boston or throughout Phoenix or throughout Sacramento, all these great cities that hated the Lakers and hated Kobe. But there's no chance he is a top five player. And I know that I'm going to get a lot of backlash from a lot of Kobe fans and a lot of Laker fans that think that Kobe is the best player of all time. I mean, a lot of them were saying it. I don't think they really believe it, but a lot of them were saying it during the banner ceremony where he got two of them. I was okay with him getting two jerseys retired and all that. I thought that was cool. He kind of deserved it. And I also get that he's your favorite player or he's one of your favorite players. But look, Allen Iverson is my favorite player of all time. You don't see me saying he should be in the top 10 or the top 5. Just because he's your favorite player doesn't give you a pass to be completely subjective. Try to be objective about this. Kobe is not a top 5 player of all time. You can make it an argument, a legitimate argument, that Kobe was only the best player one time in all his 5 championships. You can make, on his team, Shaq throughout the first three-peat, although you can also argue that Kobe was more important, or at least on an equal standing with Shaq, in the last two championships of that three-peat. And then Pau Gasol should have won MVP of the finals in 2010, where he destroyed, absolutely destroyed Kevin Garnett. And if you don't believe me, go back and watch the tapes, because that was Pau Gasol's series. That was Pau Gasol's redemption for 2008, where he was manhandled by Kendrick Perkins and Kevin Garnett. So, I love Kobe. I respect Kobe. But he's not a top 5 player of all time. Top 10, sure. But not top 5. You're killing me. Top 5? That's ahead of Wilt, ahead of Russell, ahead of Bird, ahead of Oscar, ahead of Hakeem? Oh, stop it. Just stop it. And as bad as Kobe being 5 is, that's not the worst selection on this list. That award goes to Kevin Durant at number 13, and I am laughing as I'm saying that, but believe me, there is nothing funny about that. How can he possibly, at what point, now I will laugh, at what point did he get ahead of Dr. J? Can someone answer me that question? Dr. J, let's just forget for a minute how he revolutionized basketball. We'll get to that in a second. But let's just look at the accomplishments this guy had throughout his career. And yes, I'm going to include the ABA, because if you're going to say that the ABA stats and accomplishments shouldn't be included because the ABA was the lowest standard, then you can throw LeBron's entire career out the window because he's played in that pathetic Eastern Conference. And I will argue until I'm blue in my face that the difference between the ABA to the NBA is not as big as what the Eastern Conference has been to the Western Conference throughout LeBron's entire career. So let's count it. He was an NBA champion once. He was an ABA champion twice. He was the most valuable player in the NBA once in 1981. He was the 3 times he was the ABA most valuable player. 11-time All-Star. 5-time ABA All-Star, so that's 16 times. And a combined 11 times or either All-NBA or All-ABA selection. And only twice of those was he an All-NBA second team. So 9 of those 11 years, he was All-NBA or All-ABA, but that's a tongue twister, first team. And to top it all off, he's got a combined, once again, combined ABA and NBA. He's got over 30,000 career points, 10,000 rebounds, 5,000 assists. How is Kevin Durant ahead of this guy? And then you, look, people want to be critical of him for playing in the ABA because it was the lowest standard of competition. He revolutionized basketball because of that. If he went to the NBA instead of the ABA, there's a big possibility that he would have never been the showman that he ended up being and then revolutionized the game, because Jordan's the first guy to say that he looked up to Dr. J as well as David Thompson and players like that. And their ability to get out in the open court and really showcase their athleticism. If he went to the NBA, he may have just been Julius Erving, not Dr. J. Dr. J was so influential that he, when the ABA-NBA merged, air quotations around the merge, was really swallowed up by the NBA, he was so big that they wanted him. That was the only guy they really wanted, the NBA. They wanted to get Dr. J because they knew what an icon he was. And now all of a sudden, Slam or whoever, they want to put Kevin Durant ahead of him already? Look, there's a chance that Kevin Durant, when it's all said and done, has a better career and is a better player than Dr. J. Not now, though. Why are players getting rewarded from a potential and other players are getting punished, essentially, for actual accomplishments? This is utterly insane. Oh, I need a break. Hold on. All right, I'm back and I've settled down. Next up was Barkley ahead of Karl Malone was odd, but I sort of get it. I think Barkley, especially in the 90 season and 93 season, was maybe better than Malone has ever been for single seasons, but Karl Malone's consistency throughout, I would always put Karl Malone ahead of Charles Barkley. The problem is they put Steph Curry ahead of both of them, and that's just insulting. Look, quite honestly, it's easier to point out what they got right. And Iverson at number 28, I think, was fair. That might be a little bit higher because I got Iverson around the 25 mark because I'm currently doing a book. Cheap plug, right, on my own podcast. I'm currently doing a book where I'm doing the top 75 players of all time. But I separated the three-point era from the non-three-point era. So from 1980 onwards is the top 50 of all time. And prior to 1980, before they brought a three-point line into the NBA, I've got the top 25 of all time. And 28 might be a little bit too high for Iverson, despite the fact that he was my favorite player of all time. Then they had Steve Nash and Chris Paul ahead of Bob Cousy, Mikhail, and Dominique. I should have dedicated this entire episode to this ridiculous list. That's absurd. But not nearly as bad as putting Connie Hawkins, who I loved his game. His game was revolutionary, right? But they had him ahead of Sam Jones, who won 10 championships. And for a huge part of those championships, he was the primary scorer of those Celtics teams, with Russell taking care of rebounding and defense. What? They had Connie Hawkins ahead of Sam Jones. I can't believe that. Vince Carter ahead of Manu. All right, then. Kawhi Leonard, who, look, he's probably played about three good seasons. They had him ahead of Lonzo Mourning. And if you want to say, okay, quality over quantity, sure, but why is he ahead of Grant Hill then? And then they had Giannis over Chris Webber. Yep, I'm done. Giannis has played a good season and a half, and they got him on this list ahead of guys like Chris Webber. Unbelievable. All right, let's move on to a much more enjoyable topic, Zaza Pachulia. Now, the thing about Zaza Pachulia that pisses me off more than anything is the fact that people still defend this guy. I put up a video of when he just recently, I can't even describe it. He just fell over. It was like a sniper hit him or something. He just fell over right, what a coincidence, right at Westbrook's knee and ankle. And I put the video up on Facebook and Instagram. And I was blown away that people were still defending this guy. They were saying that Nick Young's foot pushed, somehow propelled his entire body forward, and he had no control over it whatsoever. This guy has had a career, this guy being Zaza Pachulia. His entire legacy is this. And it's dirty. It's not tough. It's not bad. He's not Bill Laimbeer. He's not Charles Oakley, guys that actually had game. Zaza Pachulia's career has been to take cheap shots and try to injure other players. He's gone after Kawhi a couple of times. It wasn't just in the conference finals that he's done this. When he was on the Mavericks, he tried to do it. He threw incredibly dirty elbows at David West, who's now his teammate. He's gone after Paul George this year. Look, there's no benefit of the doubt with this guy. If it was just one instance, I could say, all right, sure. And someone brought up Patrick Beverley to me. And that's my point. Remember Patrick Beverley and Russell Westbrook when the Thunder had the number one seed and they were going up against the 8-seeded Rockets? Beverley bumped Westbrook. Westbrook injured his knee. He was out for the rest of the playoffs. Kevin Durant was pretty much by himself. And they beat Houston barely after that. And then they were taken out convincingly by Memphis in the second round. My point was, I gave Patrick Beverley the benefit of the doubt, because that hasn't happened since. Patrick Beverley is a tough defender, a brilliant defender, but we haven't seen him go after or try to injure anybody since. This guy is purposely trying to injure other players. And it's funny to me that the inconsistencies of NBA fans. Kelly Olynyk is considered a dirty player, right? He has one bad instance to his name, and that was the Kevin Love shoulder pull, which injured Kevin Love in the 2015, I want to say it was, playoffs? Yeah, it was 2015. It was the year they got to the finals and Kyrie Irving dislocated his kneecap or whatever, and then it was LeBron by himself against the Warriors. They want to pin that on him, but then they want to make excuses for Zaza Pachulia. And the worst thing about all this nonsense is Adam Silver refuses to suspend the guy. What will it take? What will it take for him to be suspended? He's already ruined a conference finals. Need I remind you that the Spurs were up by 20 points when Kawhi Leonard was injured by another dirty play, and I've watched that again and again and again. That was dirty because if you watch that closeout, he already closed out. He took another step after Kawhi Leonard has already released the ball to purposely get under his feet. And you say, well, he wasn't looking at his feet. Okay, basketball players don't need to look at players to know whether, if they go straight up, guess where they're going to go? They're going to go straight back down. There might be a tiny little bit of variation, but you know where their feet are going to be landing. If you're boxing out somebody, when you put your body on them, you know where they are. You're not looking at them. You're looking at the rebound. You're looking at where the ball's going off the rim. But you know where the guy that you are boxing out is. Basketball players have to know that because they don't have eyes in the back of their head. So what I'm saying is when Zaza Pachulia went underneath Kawhi Leonard and put his foot underneath him, yeah, he wasn't looking at his feet, but he knew exactly where Kawhi Leonard's foot was going to land. And it worked. It happened. Kawhi Leonard has not been the same since. Forget the conference finals. Look at this season. He has not played, he hasn't even played 10 games this season. And there's question marks over if he'll even play any significant minutes or games the rest of this year. So he's already ruined, and Kawhi Leonard was a top three MVP candidate last year. So he's already ruined that. Now he's going after Russell Westbrook. At what point does it have to be Draymond Green all over again? Draymond Green can kick Steven Adams in the nuts. That's fine. That's perfect. The moment that he flails his arms around that region towards LeBron, oh, you're suspended for a game. Sorry, mate. People want to say that Adam Silver's a great commissioner. I don't buy it. He has no backbone. There are problems in the NBA that he refuses to address. The only stuff he goes after is things that violate his SJW morals. And if that happens, then well, he's courageous. He's tough. He'll take an all-star game away from Charlotte in that situation. But if there's problems with a competitive balance in the NBA between the East and West, he doesn't do anything about it. And don't you dare bring up the all-star game. That does not count. But in terms of the playoff seeding, he hasn't done a damn thing. He hasn't done anything to fix the officiating crisis. And I'm not talking about players complaining about things when they actually are completely in the wrong, like James Harden elbowing Marcus Smart twice in the face, getting called for offensive fouls, which he should have been, and then the players jumping up and down, oh, the refs are terrible. No, the refs are actually right then. I can't believe I'm saying that. But the way that the rules are now written, they're so vague, it's The game has such a bad perception problems amongst its own fans. I can't defend this stuff. I've written a book about this. I'm talking about it on a podcast. And I can't even defend the legitimacy of the NBA. And that's under his watch. And a lot of that's under David Stern's as well. Don't think that I'm praising David Stern. A lot of these are his problems. But Adam Silver is the commissioner of the NBA right now, and he's been the commissioner for over 4 years now. He has had plenty of time to address these issues. He hasn't done anything, and yet he is more than willing to let Zaza Pachulia continue this nonsense. What is going to happen? How many careers are you going to put in the firing line to protect Zaza Pachulia from being suspended? You know, I wasn't going to praise David Stern, but look at what happened with Kobe Bryant. Kobe used to, when players would get too close to him, he would flail his arms out. When he's shooting a jump shot, he would flail his arms out and often make contact with the defender. David Stern suspended Kobe. And this is when Kobe was at the peak of the NBA. He was the main attraction up there with LeBron and Wade and those other guys. And David Stern had the balls to suspend him. And it never happened again. Why is it that Zaza Pachulia can have, you know, a highlight mix, if you wouldn't even call that. His career highlights are injuring people, and he's still not suspended. That's even worse than slams. I didn't think we could go from slams, abomination of a top 100 list of their players. I didn't think the next topic would make me even more angry. I'll be right back. I need to calm down again. All right, let's have a look at some some questions from some users. Should the NBA change its logo, and if so, who should it be? I need to calm down. The current topics are killing me. No, the NBA shouldn't change its logo. If they do change it, it's probably going to be Jordan or LeBron, just from a marketing standpoint. I hope they don't change it. Look, the NBA logo is perfect. There's nothing wrong with it. But then again, we're all saying that about jerseys too, and then all of a sudden they decided to bring out an entire wardrobe for each team of jerseys. There's about 30 different jerseys now throughout the season, and we're treated to wonderful advertising enrichment. So there's a good chance they probably will change it if we go from that logic. I genuinely hope they don't, though. Next question I've got is asking me, has the West reemerged as the dominant conference? I think it has, especially with Cleveland underperforming this year. I mean, earlier on in this season, they had that nice little winning streak, and we were thinking, well, Isaiah Thomas is going to come back, and he'll at least add something to that team. That didn't happen, obviously. And when you look at it, they essentially traded Kyrie Irving, who was featured on Slam's list, I did see his name, for Larry Nance Jr. and Jordan Clarkson. They did also add Rodney Hood and George Hill, so that needs to be taken into account for essentially spare parts. But Cleveland was the standard bearer, or the torch bearer, for so long in the East, and I don't feel like the team's caught up to where Cleveland was last year, because they've got them worse. Now, Toronto has made a leap, but I'm yet to really go all in on Toronto. There's potential of them even winning the title this year. That's how well they've been playing. But we also have to take into account their past playoff nightmares. They remind me so much of the 2011 Dallas Mavericks. It's not funny, because we had the same questions about them, and then they just rolled through the playoffs. They were sweeping the Lakers and upsetting the Miami Heat and just toying with the Durant, Westbrook, Harden, Thunder. That it was one of the great playoff runs of all time. But leading into that playoff run, we were all saying the same thing. We're like, well, we've seen them in these situations before where they've played great in the regular season, looked unbeatable, and then got beaten in the first round. And it wasn't just against the Warriors that happened. That happened quite a few times to that Mavericks team. So when I'm looking at the East, I'm not sure if the East has gotten better or Cleveland has gotten worse. It's probably a slight combination of both. I think probably 80-20. 80% Cleveland's gotten worse. 20% the East has gotten better, with teams such as Boston and Toronto. Now, when you look at the West, I think that's the total opposite. I think Golden State is just as good as what they were last year. Maybe they're having a bit of problems in terms of their focus, but from a talent standpoint, they're just as good. And the other teams have caught up, or not, if not caught up, they've absolutely gotten better, whether we're talking about Houston or Minnesota or Oklahoma or even San Antonio. You can make an argument San Antonio is better on paper if Kawhi Leonard comes back, because they added Rudy Gay, and LaMarcus Aldridge is playing a lot better too. There's also emerging teams such as Utah. Utah's not even in the playoffs. They won like 13 straight games and they're not even in the playoffs. They're right on the verge of getting the 8th seed. Then you've got other teams like Portland and Denver and New Orleans. I didn't even mention New Orleans and the way that Anthony Davis is playing. And all those teams have gotten better this year. And there's no question about it. Whereas the questions lie with the Eastern Conference. Have those teams gotten better, or has Cleveland gotten worse? So I think there's still great imbalance in the conferences. Unfortunately, because of the conferences, it really hides it. How can we really tell how good these teams are unless if they play each other in a 7-game series? And that's why I hate it. You know, I like the conference. Look, Let me level with you. I love the conferences in terms of it adds structure. There's a real historical element to it, East versus West thing. The geographical thing makes no sense to me because, I mean, you've got teams like Memphis or New Orleans in the Western Conference. Like, that's just, and you got Milwaukee in the East. That just really doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. But the way that it's such an imbalance from a competitive standpoint, I would love to see some of these underdog Eastern Conference teams go up against some of these powerhouses. I would absolutely love it. But we don't get to see that until the NBA Finals, and then we get one series of it. And that's not enough. That's not enough of a sample size. Especially if we have a favorable matchup for the Eastern Conference, we're essentially catfished into believing that both these conferences are closer than what we think. They're really not. Now, I would love to see balance there. I would love to see competitiveness there. But it's really been 20 years now since we've seen true conference balance, which was when Jordan retired in 98. That was the last time we saw the East and the West. You could almost split them right down the middle in terms of how many contenders were on each conference. Now it's, you know, it's not as bad as what it has been, but it still hasn't improved enough for me to enjoy it. And the final question is talking about LeBron's 30,000 points, 8,000 rebounds, 8,000 assists. Look, I say a lot of things about LeBron, and a lot of it can be interpreted as quite negative criticism, and I'll wear that. But this is an incredible accomplishment. He's going to shatter record books. He really is. Everybody knows that. And that's one part of his game that you cannot deny. Like, he will stuff a stat sheet. If you just read the box score, you would think he's the greatest player of all time. You really would, because he shoots a high percentage. He gets rebounds for you. He's a hell of a rebounder, considering the way he really plays on the court. And he gets a lot of assists for you now as well, because he's essentially playing point guard. You got George Hill and Jordan Clarkson there, who are probably technically the points, but they don't play point guard. They're scorers or defenders. They really don't run an offense. My point is this is an historic achievement, and get used to it, because there's going to be quite a few more coming up unless he gets injured, and nobody wants to see him get injured. I don't want to see him get derailed. I want to see him continue to produce. We will probably see him where the question was actually, where do I think he will end up in terms of statistics in his career? I personally think he will end up around the 35,000 points, 10,000 rebounds, 10,000 assists. And that's insane when you think about it. I mean, he could play a couple more years to go after Kareem's record, but I think that's where he will finish up. And if he does finish up, honestly, even if he retired now, I would probably be the one to make an argument for him in terms of totals. If we're talking about individual seasons, then Wilt Chamberlain owns him, because you're talking about 50 points per game for one season, or 8 assists per game at the center position, or obviously 100 points per game in one game, or 55 rebounds in one game, and all kinds of rebounding records. And shot blocking, they took a sample, they looked at all the, there's about 121 games that were televised that they have footage of, and they worked out that he averaged, on those 121 games, he averaged 12 blocks per game. So from that standpoint, he would destroy LeBron in a per game situation, from a statistical standpoint. But in terms of totals, LeBron is going to be untouchable in terms of totals. And that will be his legacy. And that's a fine legacy to have, by the way. But that just doesn't get him over the line in terms of being the greatest player of all time. And quite honestly, it doesn't really get him into the top three. My top three is still Jordan, Russell, and Wilt. Because their legacies, look at Jordan's legacy, he had the stats, he had the winning, and he was an icon. He was a cultural icon. Bill Russell had winning, Wilt Chamberlain had stats, and I think Wilt Chamberlain's stats are better than LeBron's stats. Because give me quality over quantity any day of the week. Within reason, by the way. I don't want one or two seasons like Kawhi Leonard. But yeah, it's an incredible accomplishment, and that's what I expect from him. I expect 35, 10, 10. And that might be being a little bit conservative. He may get a lot more than that. And thanks for listening to this episode. And I hope I've fully calmed down now, so you don't have to worry about me. But some of those, yeah, some of... I'm looking at a piece of paper I had written down and I punched it. And there's a big dent in there. So whoever wants this piece of paper, let me know. It's kind of funny. But yeah, thanks for listening. Continue to send the questions through. And share the podcast. Let all your friends know about it. And next episode will be number 30. So let's do something special for that. Thanks, guys.